My first disclosure is that I'm not a doctor. I am a JD. That's okay. That's okay. I will not take it as an insult. Okay. So, good afternoon. I guess it is afternoon. Good afternoon, everyone. We are, as mentioned, a four-person team. I'll mention who we all are in a minute. But what we're here to do today is to, well, first, disclose the fact that none of us have conflicts of interest, and to talk about a conference that was held last September called the Geno Community Think Tank, in which all four of us were engaged. It was a conference planned by a partnership using the community-based participatory research method of planning and implementing a conference. So the principal partners were the center that I direct at the University of Michigan School of Public Health, called the Center for Public Health and Community Genomics. Our center was created to highlight not only integrating genomics in public health practice, but also to concentrate on the ethical, legal, social issues resulting from genetics, and to emphasize the need for community engagement in genetics, and to try to address health disparities in ways that would assure that genetics will help narrow and not result in widening health disparities. Partnering with us in this endeavor were the network of 37 prevention research centers around the country. You may be familiar with them. Their primary funding comes from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They all work on prevention with research projects that are usually interventions, trying to reduce health disparities, using typically an ecological approach, multiple factors that bear on health and disease, use the approach of community-based participatory research, emphasize social and environmental determinants of health and disease, and for the most part ignore and don't include genetics or genomics in their research agendas because of this emphasis on social environmental determinants. A very important and probably the key partner in planning and implementing this conference was the National Community Committee attached to the Prevention Research Center Network, and you'll hear more about that from Ms. Ellegreen-Moten in a moment. Other less involved but important participants in the planning were CDC's Office of Public Health Genomics, which funded this conference, the National Human Genome Research Institute, and because the conference was held in St. Louis, there was quite a bit of assistance by people at St. Louis University and Washington University St. Louis, and as I said, using the community-based participatory research process in planning. Here's a picture of our planning committee taken at the conference site. So what were the goals of this conference? First of all, we wanted to share what people had been doing in engaging communities in genomics education, genomics research, genomics policy, what people had been doing, what were the best practices in incorporating genomics in the agendas of prevention research centers, the few that have been incorporating genomics, and what were the best practices that we could find in groups that were incorporating genomics in public health practice in partnership with communities. Other goals were to explore where one might get funding to further these kinds of activities, to identify the policy issues in genomics that were of particular interest and concern of communities once they are aware of the issues, and as Ms. Green-Moten will mention, to see if out of this conference might emerge a group of the National Community Committee that would focus on genomics from a community perspective in the future, and then to expand a pre-existing website from an earlier project involving communities called the Geno Community website. So who came to the conference? We had 125 attendees from around the country. They were split about 50-50 between community-based organizations and academic institutions that partner in prevention research centers, several people from public health practice. The groups represented in total 20 of the 37 prevention research centers. And most of the community-based attendees were from communities of color. We had quite a bit of diversity represented at this conference. And so I'm going to turn the description of what went on over to my three team partners here. Mrs. E. Hill Deloney, who is a community leader at Flint at Odyssey House and its Health Awareness Center in Flint, Michigan, who will describe the component of this conference that started us off, called the Intervention Before the Intervention. Ms. Ella Green Moulton, who will tell us about the National Community Committee. She is the Community Education Coordinator for our Center on Public Health and Community Genomics, and may or may not be a newly elected member of the Executive Board of APHA that we'll know in, what, a couple hours? and then Dr. Stephen Modell, who is the coordinator of research for our center, and will talk to us about the data as to what we learned from the conference. And then I'll just do a very quick wrap-up at the end on some of the key lessons learned. So, Ms. Deloney.
Good afternoon. Again, when I always speak and I talk about the intervention before the intervention, people ask, why is this apparent? Why are we starting with that point? But that is what we're trying to get all of you to do whenever you get funding and you're working with the community. Before we develop plans and logistics in connecting with communities around the topics of genomics, we need to consider what communities need, what the academicians need, what the health department, because we're all coming from different perspectives and we're seeing through different lens. Today, this panel will introduce you to the Michigan experience with community research partners. In the end, we want you to think about the role of an agenda of each partner and what they bring to the table and how it impacts their decision making. And actually, specifically, we want you to know how we did our project as it relates to genomics. In the end, we want you to consider this process whenever you're doing a partnership, because all of us have different needs. So we need to find out what does the health department need from this result? What does the community need from it? What does the university to mean? The traditional approach to genetic research would be to write a proposal and perhaps even get the money before you go to the community and ask, tell them what you want them to do. And then trying to convince them that that's what your needs are. When if we're going to really do CBPR, when the idea is approached, that it goes back to your community group. Most of you have a CAB or a community board. That idea is discussed at that table. And then you come out with what everybody needs to know. With the process that I just described earlier about you coming to us after you have already completed your proposal, gotten your grants, is we would like to challenge that and have you to change that. It takes a lot more time to set up a partnership that's equal than anything else you want to do. I'd like to give you an example of thinking about professional world-class athletes. They practice years and years and years. Actually, if they want to be a professional football player, you just start all the time, they're little kids with a design, I'm going to be a professional football player, so they do the work. But let's think about what you do when you get ready to paint your house. For example, when you paint a room. How much time and energy is spent in the preparation of time to clean the wall, to strip the wallpaper, to sand the wall, to prime the wall, put the blue tape around the windows, and then you finally paint. Most of the time is spent in the preparation stage. Well, the intervention before the intervention suggests that more time should be spent prior to the work to make the work easier. Why work with communities? Actually, you get better research. We often hear people say they can't get community to participate in your clinical trials. It's because they don't know you. They don't trust you. They don't even, you've selected some you don't even know if it's an interest in them, and you want us to come. And from a historical perspective, it takes time to build trust. And a trust isn't on the subject matter that you're presenting. It's if they've begun to know people and build relationships with them, and they trust that person. For example, in my case, if Dr. Citrin calls me any time of day and say, I need you to do something, I'm going to be there because I trust him and respect him, and I had almost 20 years to get to know him. And another person come and ask me, would I do something? Most time I'll say no. Even after I get to talking with them, I still don't, if I don't get the sense that they are really, I'm not getting this, we as African Americans, I'm sure other people are the same way, but I can only speak for first person. I have to feel that you, I have had so many experiences in life that I got an innate radar that let me know where you're talking at me, talking for me, talking about me. Is it something that I'm glad I have that gift of? But if you want to know who has the gift the most, it would be children. If you want to work with children and they get a sense that you don't like them, they're going to act out, going to do everything they can in order to delay you, throw you off, or whatever it is, but you're not going to get that cooperation. When we started on this, we had like a three-leg stool in the partnership. You had the university and the health department with equal legs, and then the little nub like this for the community. So it was falling on us all the time, like it had been falling on us forever. So our job was to try to grow that third leg. And we're still in the process, but the leg has grown somewhat. We basically had three stages in here. We had, let me pass it on. Okay. When we first came together, it was a dependence type of first stage in that, because we were actually dependent on our partners to help guide everything, and we felt like they knew. And give you an idea, when the university spoke, it was like E.F. Hutton had spoken. So we just listened. And then we came in an independent stage where, in that stage, community began to coalesce around that table, just in universities. We actually organized an organization called the Community-Based Organization Partners. We call it CBOP, which we're trying to organize around the country. The purpose is to give the community power, to empower the community, to give them a voice, and to build capacity on that. And then on interdependence, which is not on your screen, actually when we all come together pretty much and we can plan and do things together. And then we have the interdependence where we work together so that we can build trust. We build ownership, and everybody has a part because you know what the community needs out of, you know what the university needs, and you know what their university needs. Each one of them will have a different component, but they built it in the whole process so we can come out with something we can all be proud of. One of the things that we deal with in the NOMIS, we're trying to let every partner know that capacity building is across the board. Quite often when you come in, you think the community needs capacity building. Community is an expert in their community. You are the foreigner coming in the community. You need to understand that. And if you don't make them feel comfortable, you can ask questions for days. You're going to get some answers. But it's not the answers you need to work with or the answers that advance your work. It's just respect the way we've learned to, in our society, to act. If you want a really true genomic process, and the word genomics just had a negative connotation in the first place in the community. If you don't know that, I want to share that with you. So until we got people really wanting to do genomics, we had to have different words for it. And one of the ones I would use was inherited health. You can understand your health from your mother. But why you want my blood? Why? Because we in our community focus, I don't care how long it lasts, for 42 years, it's going to last longer than that, on the Tuskegee experiment. And there's no such thing as objective analysis. Whether you know it or not, if you don't think about it, you're going to bring some personal experience and all that data. That's how you're going to form it. So hopefully we can trust the experience that you bring and our experience to come out with data that we really want to have.
Good afternoon, everyone. So Toby and Mrs. Deloney has talked a little bit about the partnership and the different components of a partnership and what it takes to really build a partnership, which what each component needs to do by itself before it comes together as a partner. I want to talk a little bit about the community partner that was part of this project, and that would be the National Community Committee. I also want to talk, just share a little bit about, Mrs. Deloney mentioned the Michigan experience, which is a very different experience. Having worked with a number of communities across the country, some embrace the Michigan experience, others don't. But in Michigan, and in focusing on the Three Lakes Stew, community is, we define community very narrowly, very directly. We usually will have you know that when we talk about community, we're talking about the folk who are being studied. That's our community for the most part. There are some occasions where you might have a broadened definition of community, but in Michigan, that's our definition of community. And you can probably imagine that not everybody agreed with that definition. So when we talk about the National Community Committee, that's a committee of representatives representing 37 different prevention research centers across the country, each having a different mission, a different focus, health focus, and many of them had a different understanding and definition of community. So to understand the National Community Committee, you need to understand that it actually was commissioned in 1999 by the National, introduced by the National Prevention Research Center's Steering Committee, supported by most of the leadership there, most of the PRC directors, the National Program Office, and at that point became one of the six standing committees of the Prevention Research Center Steering Committee. So the National Community Committee was actually formally established in 2000, representing those 37 prevention research centers, and actually came together to provide a national platform for the identified communities of all of those prevention research centers, and to respond to gaps in research agendas both at the local and national level, and there are still some gaps. So the National Community Committee was actually introduced to genetics and genomics starting in 2005 when we were invited to attend a meeting in D.C., sponsored by the Genetics Alliance. So we were introduced to the committee, to the idea of genetics and genomics. And I always like to give my spiel on the definition, because some folk might be sitting and wondering what the heck is genomics. I sort of know what genetics is. Well, for me, the way I ground myself, I say we usually know that genetics is that hereditary information, the study of the hereditary information that's passed down through offsprings and actually determine who we are, how we look, or influence who we are, how we look, how we act, and all of that. And understanding that genomics is all of that, including social and environmental issues that would help determine who we are, how we act, how we look, and all of that. So we were introduced in 2005. We had a funding opportunity in 2006, which was to consider doing the genomics forums, which was a five-state collaborative, which included the National Community Committee, because this is a national hub of community representatives that we've partnered with and have decided that we're not going to let them go, but a resource for the different projects that we decide to get involved with. So in 2007, the forums were held in the five Midwest states of the Prevention Research Center program, Illinois, Michigan, Iowa, Missouri, and Minnesota. So at that forum, we started to talk about how NCC can better position itself to become a resource for other entities, funding entities, other studies, and the like. So we discussed it initially in 2007 at the Midwest Forums, but also talked about it again at the think tank. How can we actually do that? What will we need to do? And that was where the NCC SPIG, or Special Projects Interest Group, came about. The fact that we wanted our members who were community representatives to understand genomics more so that they would understand the language, would be able to share the information with other folk, and especially with the Prevention Research Center's directors, and hopefully be able to engage those groups to integrate genomics into the work that's being done already, not creating a separate level, but integrated into the work that's being done. And so we talked about the SPIG at the 2010 think tank. It was approved in at the 2010 NCC annual meeting, and it was adopted officially in 2010 at that meeting. So what were the next steps for the SPIGs? Well, we wanted to develop an informal national voice on genomics, serving as a national resource, advocating for the integration of genomics in the existing PRCs, and facilitating the development of genomics-focused activities at the local level. What we thought we would be able to do, and I can't read that. Does that say I'm done? Okay. Okay. Thank you. So the facilitating of development of genomics-focused activities at the local level, the idea here is, if you know anything about the Prevention Research Centers, most of them have a focus. They have a core project. They, Mrs. Deloney mentioned the community boards, where they bring community members in, different community-based organizations, agencies, faith-based organizations to serve on that board. But what actually happens is most of those folk don't get a chance to address their issues. Because if we're honest, we know that most people come to a board with an agenda. You have something that you work on. So usually a lot of those folk don't get to work on their issues. We're thinking that the facilitating the development of this SPIG would allow other members of those community groups to get involved in the work, get involved in the research. And one way to do it would be to introduce the idea of family health history. Everybody has history. Most of us don't know what our history is. So that would be one way of getting folk involved. So we are now in the process of having our monthly meetings, developing this SPIG. We've had an opportunity to serve as a resource to the next project that we were involved in, trying to determine what genomics and public health is going to look like over the next 5 years. So we have members who are ready now to step forward and have some of these discussions with other academics and other entities that might be able to fund some of the programs that we want to do. So we're working to do that, to strengthen that voice and move forward with that. So now Stephen's going to talk a little bit about the think tank and the breakdown.
I'm a bit worried about the time. Have I got 5 minutes or what?
Yeah, 5 minutes is over.
Okay, good.
You and I have about a negative two, but we'll do our best.
Okay, thanks a lot. Toby asked me to talk about the numbers. And so Toby already mentioned the number of individuals who attended. We actually had 131 people who registered. At the end of a very busy and concentrated day, 74 people handed in their questionnaires. 38 were from community organizations. The lion's share of these were affiliated with prevention research centers. 30 were from academe. And by the way, it just shows that third leg of the stool, we were very successful. It did grow. 30 from academe, less so affiliated with the PRCs, and there were 3 respondents who handed in their forms from public health practice. We had more practitioners, but they were very busy at the end of the day. The first question on our conference questionnaire was, what new community activities for your organization are you interested in based on the meeting? And the emphasis here would be new. And even though a lot of the community organizations are involved with social and environmental situations, we appreciate that some are indirectly involved with genomics, such as chronic disease activities, and certainly our academicians. So more than 65% of the respondents said that they'd be interested in community dialogues. Same thing with community genetics education and community-based participatory research in genomics also attracted a lot of attention. A slightly lesser number, but still up there, of people were interested in establishing new collaborations. What this slide indicates to me is a great interest in human-level interaction and activities that, that involve those, rather than simply, what do you think of the technology? We have a breakdown of those interested in future genomics activities. In the questionnaire, we used a 5-point Likert scale, so these results would represent the top 2 points of the Likert scale. For those who expressed a positive interest in future activities involving genomics community dialogue, 54% of those people were from the community organizations, 38% were academic attendees, and 6% were from public health practice. So this indicates the great interest of our community members in engaging in future conversations. Next, those interested in participating in community genetics education. What you find here is that the percentage of academic attendees goes up a little bit. And, of course, that's the nature of the beast, that they're involved in education in a variety of contexts and they want to see the education spread. Before I turn to the next slide, which has to do with future activities involving genomic research, you might expect, or I would expect, that perhaps the percentage would go down for our community constituents. It's research, perhaps less interested. But we didn't find that. We found that members from community organizations were way up there, 52% of people expressing an interest in future activities involving genomics-based research were from the communities. And this may have to do with the wording of the question because we made it rather inclusive, involving both genetic testing, genetic testing-related research, as well as family history. We were also interested in the thematic areas that could be covered by future activities. Those of you who are statisticians in the audience will notice the glaring mistake imported from a different section of our report, that 67.6% should actually be 79.7%. And what we found is basically that there are three bands of topical interest. And the top band, way up there, above 70% of the respondents indicated an interest in family health history and in genomics and health disparities. In the middle band, about 10 percentage points below, you find an interest in activities dealing with chronic disease prevention. Now, the next band just amazes me because it's below the 50% level, and it's future activities dealing with genetic testing and gene-environment interaction. Now, how many times have you heard those two terms mentioned at our conference the last couple of days? And, of course, those items are foremost on our mind. But as far as the constituents at the think tank, it was the simple things like family history that really drew their attention for future activities. We also had an open-ended section in the questionnaire asking about other sorts of activities that participants would be interested in. One of these was communicating genomics information. And people were especially creative in their suggestions along these lines. For example, establishing a genomics information clearinghouse, or social marketing was mentioned. There was even mention of a blog. And I don't know how many of you have been to the expo, but this year you find the zombie program for getting people prepared being sponsored by the CDC. If you go to a number of the international booths, you'll find them using social networking to impart public health information to young people in other countries. So this was sort of a prognostic. suggestion that we got from our group. Family history was also mentioned in the sense of providing the communities with a model that they can follow in order to assess family history and make it a valuable instrument in their communities. It was also mentioned by several people of training of community health workers, not just in the sense of health, but in the sense of health related to genetically associated conditions. And this is sort of interesting because you find mention of community health workers in the 2010 ASTHO guide on genetics in the states, genetic activities in the states, as well as in the Secretary's Advisory Committee on Education and Training. And several people voiced the importance of professional education, not just with doctors, but also with nurse trainees, as well as community leaders. In the interest of speeding things up, we found that the meeting did have a spurring or motivational effect on furthering some of the conference objectives. Of these three different items, the one to receive the lowest percentage, the conference spurred me on, was working with health departments on community-based projects in genomics. Still above 45%, but it's the lowest of the three, and perhaps it indicates that there's a little bit more work to be done. Conclusions from the numbers: that we exceeded our target numbers as far as the number of registrants for the think tank, that there was a vigorous interest in genomics activities that would advance community health, that there was a general perception of the value of collaboration, and it was felt that there was a need for a sustained effort, especially in connecting up our community members as well as researchers with funding organizations and agencies.
And for the final wrap-up on lessons learned from the whole activity of planning and implementing, it's quite clear from our experience that communities are interested in partnering with universities and health departments in research practice and education and policy development involving genomics. That, in fact, as Stephen just mentioned, communities are even more interested in integrating genomics with prevention research than are the academics who are engaged in that research. That the National Community Committee and its Special Interest Group on Genomics are excellent partners in advancing the community-based genomic research agenda nationally. And that if we are to assure that genomics narrows and doesn't widen health disparities, we must advance community-based partnerships in research practice and policy. Thank you.